Our Sabbath text is found for the sermon in Exodus 20, verses 8 through 11, and you'll find that on page 61. Exodus 20, 8 through 11. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male servant or your female servant, or your livestock, or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Recently, a team of Dutch researchers at the University of Tilburg in the Netherlands made a startling discovery that many of you know through anecdotal evidence. Maybe you've experienced this yourself, but it's now becoming mainstream science. That is, they discovered that countless numbers of people in our secular postmodern society in the West experience what these researchers call leisure sickness. Leisure sickness. Seems like an oxymoron, doesn't it? How can you be sick when you're at leisure? But they define it now as the condition of people developing symptoms of sickness during weekends and or vacations. Leisure sickness. What they've discovered is that a good 7 to 10% of their total respondents experienced symptoms of sickness instead of health recovery and regeneration during these times of vacation and weekends. The most frequent symptoms, headaches, including migraines, fatigue, muscular pains, nausea, and viral infections like flu and the common cold. These symptoms manifest themselves not at work, but during the times of their supposed leisure and rest. The modern industrial West has structured a 4-day, 36-hour work week. This is throughout Europe where this study was done, in order to provide man with abundant leisure and recreation time. But it seems that something has escaped us. The ability to genuinely rest. The ability to genuinely rest during our times of leisure, rest, and vacation. The study discovered that both men and women experienced leisure sickness, men slightly more than women, and they found it impossible to rest for several reasons, chief among them being difficulties with the transition from work to non-work. Difficulties with this transition from going from a full-day work week then suddenly to a 2 or 3 day weekend. So conditioned were the respondents to their work environment that they had no frame of reference or structure for understanding rest and leisure. Also, stress. Stress was a major factor in people being unable to rest. Stress associated with travel and vacation. Everybody knows at least a little something on this. How many times have you come home or you've had a co-worker come home and say, I need a rest from my vacation? Thirdly, chief among the reasons, the inability to relax. Just sheer inability to relax. Once more, no one had ever taught these people what true rest and relaxation was. They had no clue as to what they were supposed to do or feel or experience in order to genuinely rest. There simply was no framework or context for true rest. Shocked? Shocked? Maybe amused, are you? By this condition of leisure sickness. Well, the Christian, especially the Reformed Christian, should not be surprised by it at all, should we? We have observed the gradual decay of true Sabbath rest for generations, in everything from the disappearance of Sunday evening service to the repeal of the so-called blue laws. You remember what blue laws were in America? That is the mandating Sunday closing of businesses, except those of necessity. Oh, if only I were king for a day. Additionally, the individual's understanding of and ability to love and appreciate true Sabbath rest has evaporated into the mists of time in these last few generations. Modern man has plenty of leisure, characterized by daunting activity and schedules time to stress a stopwatch. He has plenty of entertainment, over which he sometimes stresses all week. For example, my son-in-law, he's fretting over the progress of his Philadelphia Eagles even now in the playoffs. We have plenty of entertainment, don't we? We have plenty of rest, too, don't we? Where we don't have to report to work, maybe. But we have no clue as to what we should replace this feeling of guilt for not doing anything or this nagging feeling that this vast expanse of regular three-day weekends is somehow empty and unfulfilled despite our best efforts to play. Is there a cure for leisure sickness, do you think? Is there a cure for leisure sickness, do you think? Most certainly, I would say to you, there is. The cure for leisure sickness is true Sabbath rest, isn't it? True Sabbath rest. There is true rest in life. Thank God. There is true rest in life. The return from which gives meaning and refreshment then to the six-day work week that follows. There is a rest, out of which comes not a perverted leisure sickness, but a new man, refreshed and full of spiritual and physical health. Let's examine the first of our two-part series on the Sabbath then this day from our text, verses 8 through 10. You'll see on the inside flap of your bulletin on our outline, verses 8 through 10. Sabbath or rest. They're synonymous words, Sabbath and rest. Sabbath. As covenant people of a new creation, we are to sanctify the Sabbath throughout the earth. We are to sanctify the Sabbath throughout the earth, verses 8 through 10. Well, we're in the midst, we're taking up again. It's been a while, hasn't it, since before Christmas, really, since we've been in the Ten Commandments in the larger framework of the book of Deuteronomy. But we are in the study of the Ten Commandments. I haven't forgotten. And we are at the fourth commandment now, which positively requires the remembering and sanctifying of the Sabbath. The other commandments have been negative up to this point. Thou shalt not. This is a thou shalt. And what a glorious thing this fourth commandment is. What a covenant blessing. What a covenant blessing upon you here, Saint, today. Unknown to the sons of men before, the children of Israel, too. The entire reality of a day of rest was a curious distinction of the people of Israel from her earliest days, and the people around looked at her oddly. Was one of those things that set her apart from the nations. In our own day, of course, it is hard to imagine there not being a weekend, by which we mean 2 days. Saturday and Sunday have been conflated, haven't they, in the idea of the weekend. 2 days of unremitting leisure and recreation. Saturday has spilled over and taken over, if you will, Sunday in so many ways, with maybe an hour thrown in on Sunday, for the holier-than-thou crowd to go to church and pay their respects to God. But for the ancient, there was no such thing as a 1 day in seven, much less a 2 day weekend, or even less often an occasional 3 day weekend as we have, with paid vacations to boot, unheard of the ancient world. With a modern American union movement complaining and whining because they're not able to squeeze more out of management in these days of recession, it would do us all well to gain biblical perspective on what rest meant to the ancient slave, farmer, and city tradesman. What did rest mean to them, biblical rest? The Israelites in Egypt, for example, were gradually reduced to utter base servitude under Pharaoh's who knew not Joseph. There were no weekends with chariot RVs headed for the Egyptian equivalent of Yellowstone National Park. There were no nearly 3 weeks of vacation time, paid vacation time, in a tropical paradise like Hawaii for the likes of Pastors Moses or Aaron. Rather, there was unremitting work, slave labor, for the Hebrew, 7 days a week from sunup to sundown. There was no let-up, as there would be for the native Egyptian, who had the festivals of his gods at various intervals in the solar year of the Egyptians. But for the 12-month, 28-day lunar calendar of the Hebrews, there was no downtime or festival for the abject slave from the descendants of Jacob. His life, from cradle to grave, was one of daunting, dreary, unremitting work with no moment of pleasure, reflection, or refreshment. They were a subject people, as far as the rest of the world was concerned, there in existence to serve the Egyptians. And as it was with the Egyptians, so it would be with the Assyrians and the Babylonians, the Greeks, the Persians, and the Romans. The human heart, darkened by ignorance and sin, knows not the heart and mind of God, who on the seventh day of creation rested on the seventh day from all the work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy. The pagan mind and heart is utterly blind and ignorant of true rest because they are blind and ignorant of its creator, Yahweh Elohim. The English poet Matthew Arnold knew precisely this state of affairs in the life of the pagan man. I quote from his poem, The Buried Life. The Buried Life. And he says, there arrives a lull in the hot race wherein he doth forever chase that flying and elusive shadow, rest. The pagan heart. And amongst the pagan culture of our own day, filled with leisure sickness, there is that same lull in the hot race that we call the weekend, where we chase the elusive shadow of rest and never find it. How many of your contemporaries out there in the world, friends, relatives, workmates, chase after this elusive thing, rest, and never find it? Isaiah puts it this way, the wicked are like the troubled sea when it cannot rest, whose waters cast up mire and dirt. There is no peace, says my God, to the wicked. This is precisely because true rest is part of revealed religion, where it will never be found unless it is opened unto previously lost sinners by a gracious God. This is what happens to the Hebrews at Sinai when Yahweh Elohim declares, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Note these chief features of our text today. We are to remember the Sabbath. You see, in contrast, you have this contrast between the two commands, one in Exodus and one in Deuteronomy. I'm going to be generally preaching from Exodus 20 this week and Deuteronomy chapter 5 next week, and you'll see the contrast in the commands. This command ends, of course, with the hearkening back to the creation mandate. In 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and you'll see that in concluding this command next week in Deuteronomy chapter 5, the reason for keeping this command, you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Rest and redemption are the two major themes of the Sabbath. We're treating rest today, we'll treat redemption next week. But the chief features of our command this week, we are to remember the Sabbath. We will observe the Sabbath next week, but we are to remember the Sabbath this week. Once more, we encounter what is called the Zakar motif. The Hebrew word for remember is Zakar. It is important to remember yourself. That remembrance involved more than merely summoning a thought from the misty banks of memory to the forefront of one's consciousness. Remembering in the Bible means much more than that, doesn't it? Remembering the Sabbath is not a mere memory recall exercise of a high school student that might regurgitate something for his SATs. What the covenant man or woman remembers, he or she does so as to obey what is remembered. That's right. Amen. We are to remember so as to obey. Somebody's familiar with that word, aren't they? One orders his life so as to obey what follows. We are not only to remember the Sabbath, we are to sanctify the Sabbath. We are to make it holy. This is the sense of keeping it holy. It is to be set aside as a day unto God Almighty. And as we will see below and next week, God has his own employments for us by which we reflect his image. We don't do nothing on the Sabbath, but we do what God has in mind and in store for us. God keeps Sabbath. We keep Sabbath. Thirdly, note with me also, Sabbath means rest. Sabbath means rest. And as we studied very closely in midweek Bible study, the words Sabbath and rest, they're completely different words in English, but they are identical in Hebrew. Additionally, they share the same root as the word for seven then. Well, how do we distinguish whether to translate Shabbat as Sabbath or rest? How do we do it? By context, yes. Oh, what a great voice you have this morning, congregation. By context, by its very nature and definition, then, the Sabbath involves the kind of rest outlined in the Scriptures. Note with me as well, rest means a cessation of work. A cessation of work. A complete week consists of 7 days, 6 of which we go out into a lost and fallen world and we rest a living from a reluctant creation. Whew, it's work, isn't it? We labor and toil by the sweat of our brow to wring a sometimes meager, sometimes abundant harvest of food and clothing and shelter from a cursed world of dust and thorns and thistles. So reluctant and so meager is this cursed creation to yield its abundance, and so anxious does man become over piling up enough to ensure his provision for his needs that it takes an act of faith to rest in it, doesn't it? Sometimes it takes an act of faith to rest in it. How many of our employers, I talk to some of you and I find out, just as I experienced as well before going into the ministry, how many of our employers say, oh, by the way, Brian or Warren or Owen, can you work Sunday? Can you work this Sunday? Oh, you can. Okay, the next time raises come around or that cherry position opens up, sorry, it ain't going to be you. But Sabbath means a cessation of work. It takes an act of faith to rest in it. And this is exactly what we mean when we say to you that the Sabbath is an article of revealed religion, bestowed by a good God for the blessing of man. Which creature then acts by faith? He acts then in the image of the God who made him. In this lost world of blood, sweat, and tears, the lot of Israel in Egypt is a metaphor for our entire race. The bulk of us eke out a bare existence for a few short years, and then we crawl to our graves for a dirt nap. A lucky few lord it over us as kings and princes, and we labor for them as if they were gods, but the vast remainder of us live lives that are, as Thomas Hobbes puts it, the life of man, solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short. The insecurities and the sheer rebellion in the soul of man compels him to work and play unremittingly, whose soul is on duty 24/7 in this life. The fruit of this lost soul is evident in the condition of leisure sickness, isn't it? It is a sickness of the heart as much of the body. Behold, O man, your lot, apart from biblical Christianity, apart from revealed religion, this is the lot of every man. Solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short. Only and exclusively does the Judeo-Christian tradition of revealed religion in the Bible make for true rest for man. Note as well that rest from toil and labor is not only for man, but it's creation-wide, isn't it? It's creation-wide. Our commandment is inclusive of man and beast, land, air, and sea. Israel has just exited from a place where the dainty few rested all the time and never worked, while the unwashed masses toiled from sunup to sundown 7 days a week without ever resting. Beasts, of course, labored under these same conditions, and there's also evidence that the soil and land of ancient empires, including Ethiopia, Babylon, and Persia, all wastelands now, presently arid desert, was once fertile and flourishing. Agronomists tell us that these fertile regions were exhausted by poor crop rotation and sheer ignorant wearying of the soil. Rest for the land is provided biblically as well in the Sabbaths of Israel. We'll unpack more of this as we continue to unpack Deuteronomy. But with revealed religion, with the giving of the great Sabbath of the Lord, no longer will exhaustion reign. No longer will exhaustion reign. There will be true rest for households. There will be true rest for households now. All will acknowledge the God who made them. There will be silence to hear his voice in the word and fellowship with the assembly of the saints. All man and beast, land and sea, will find rest for body as well as soul. You're meant, you're designed, you're wired to stop from your toil. And with your weary eyes upon that next furrow or that next contract, you look up to heaven instead. You turn off the noisy lathe and the copy machine, and you listen for the voice of God on the Sabbath. You rest from your bumper-to-bumper commute. Oh, what miserable. I'm so glad I'm out of Chicago. You rest from your bumper-to-bumper commute and the stress of making your next appointment, and you relax with your family and the people of God. Take a break from doing for yourself and your family, and you do for someone else, perhaps, that can't do for themselves. In other words, you take biblical rest. All of this requires a great deal of faith, brother and sister, because our intuition tells us to keep piling it up, keep piling up that next sheaf of wheat, that next potato here in Idaho, that next dollar. It requires faith to rest in the biblical fashion. R.J. Rushdoony, in his Institutes of the Biblical Law, says, "It is the vitality of faith which rejoices in the Sabbath and which flourishes because of the Sabbath rest." To rest in the Lord is to accept his authority and to trust in him. dear brother and sister, learn this biblical rest. Without it, you would literally work yourself to death, both physically and spiritually dead. Do not buy the modern evangelical notion that the Sabbath is out of fashion and gone with the wind and the law. The Sabbath is as true, vital, and refreshing today as it was the day it was promulgated at Sinai. How do we know this and so confidently assert it? Brings us to our second point, verse 11. Sabbath. As covenant people of a new creation, we remember that God himself sanctified rest in the earth. As we observed this past Wednesday in our Bible study, of course, we examined the words surrounding the Sabbath in what is called a creation ordinance. The Sabbath is a creation ordinance. That is, it's as true today as it was the day the world was completed, being woven into the very fabric of all that is made. God is by nature a God of rest. And this is reflected in man and beast, land, sea, and air. Moses says as much in justifying the Sabbath in this commandment too. See how he does this. For, he says, we are to rest, man and beast, child, adult, sojourner within your gates, for, that little for is a deductive preposition. That is, it indicates that what went before is based on what is to follow. For, in 6 days, the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them. Moses is basing this covenant commandment upon God's precedent pattern of work and rest. Man works because God works. We are made in his image. Man rests because God rests. We are made in his image. We bless and hallow the day because God himself blessed and hallowed it. God is a resting God as well as a working God. Does this mean that he gets tired and needs time out to catch his breath? God does he? No. We know otherwise. The scripture tells us in Isaiah, the Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He does not faint or grow weary. The rest of God is one of taking joy in his labors and creation. This is what is meant by his blessing the Sabbath and making it holy. He takes great joy and pleasure in his creation. You, O Christian, are blessed in resting upon the Sabbath. God blesses you when you rest in faith. With blessing comes joy and fellowship and union with God and his people. And I must confess to you personally that only in the Reformed faith have I found this sense of blessing and joy associated with the Sabbath. There is a festive atmosphere in true Sabbath where joy and laughter are heard. We'll see next week where indeed Moses comes before Pharaoh and says, let my people go that they may attend a festival in the wilderness. There is a festiveness to Sabbath rest. Joy and laughter are heard rather than the somber guilt and retreat behind closed doors. So many Christians want to go immediately to a list of do's and don'ts on the Sabbath that the true import and spirit of the day is immediately sucked out of it. Just tell me what I can and can't do, Pastor, and get on with it, huh? The Puritans in 17th century Boston had a list of 39 Sabbath regulations in fine print that went on page after page in their statutes, including the tossing of a ball. The tossing of a ball was against the law. The Jewish rabbis in the Mishnah went so far as to ban the eating of an egg on the Sabbath because a hen may have labored over it on the Sabbath. The Pharisees of Jesus' day, of course, you recall, excoriated him and his disciples for winnowing chaff from wheat as they traveled through a field on the Sabbath, or for even healing the sick upon the Sabbath. This is one extreme, one I like to call the Scrooge Sabbath. The Scrooge Sabbath. Warren recently reminded me that Charles Dickens' character of Scrooge is based on the English Puritans of his day. The Scrooge. Well, equally appalling, however, is what Bruce Ray, in his fine little book, Celebrating the Sabbath, this is a fine little book, I recommend it to you, Celebrating the Sabbath, let's see here, the subtitle, Finding Rest in a Restless World. The evangelical approach of the Mick Sabbath is the term he uses to call it, the Mick Sabbath. He says, Mick Sabbath is here, worship services that are quick, easy, convenient, and user-friendly. No muss, no fuss, little or no sacrifice required. Consumers can be in and out in under an hour. Nothing gets in the way of your pursuit of world for the rest of the day. This approach, of course, is based upon the antinomian notion. Antinomian, that is against the law notion, that the law is obsolete for the Christian. We no longer have to observe any kind of Sabbath, much less a Christian Sabbath. My very first call, I worked as an associate to a reverend in Chicago. Remain nameless, but he would say to me constantly, every day is a Sabbath day in Jesus' day. Every day is a Sabbath in Jesus. Consequently, we had services on Thursday evenings in the summer so that some who wanted needn't feel they'd missed a worship service because they were RVing on the weekends. Well, if every day is a Sabbath, then no day is a Sabbath. We still dwell upon the heavens and the earth and the sea and amidst all that is in them. Our full Sabbath rest has not yet been consummated. We'll deal with this next week in more detail. Our full Sabbath rest has not yet been consummated. And we labor amongst a fallen creation, still under the curse and the law, from which we must wrest a living. If there is no great blessed pattern of 7 days wired into your very DNA and your soul, then all you have to look forward to is one long, dreary, gray expanse of days in an endless treadmill pursuit of work and money and pleasure. You too will be a victim of leisure sickness, O Christian, with a vengeance. My boss was so utterly, disobediently wrong. He misunderstood not only the law, but the idea of a creation ordinance. We can no more disobey the law of the Sabbath without consequence than we can disobey the law of gravity without consequence. You can step out of a fourth-story window and think you'll pay no consequence. You can also violate the Sabbath and think you'll pay no consequence. Both illusions will be dashed by the reality of law. You will burn out and die by breaking this law, just as you would splinter on the pavement by stepping out of a four-story window. Therefore, in between these two extremes lies the blessing of the Holy Sabbath. It is not merely a day off, a mixed Sabbath, nor is it merely an off-putting day, a Scrooge Sabbath. Rather, it is a Sabbath day of rest in our God. We exult and take joy and fellowship in Him and His people. We do the works that He would do if He were here in our place. We take a 1 in 7 breather from a sick, dying, sin-cursed world in order to remember that this is not all, but that one day, all days will be blessed and holy when He returns. We will stop to take a whiff of heavenly air on Sabbath. We turn our ears to hear His voice in the word and worship. We leave off common fellowship with worldlings in order to bask in the love and the fellowship of God's people. In other words, we do the things we will do there, writ large, in the eternal Sabbath. We do them down here, where they are only writ small, and in the earthly Sabbath, at least for now. We become a blessing to ourselves and our families and our assembly, and yeah, I dare say the world. We become a when we observe the Sabbath, we become a blessing to a lost and sin-cursed world too. The entire notion of time off or a sabbatical or weekend derives from the biblical notion of the Sabbath. Take it back, Christian. Eliminate, distort, and pervert the Sabbath, and you'll have an empty, distorted, and perverted weekend, even as we see all around us in the world. You're bidden to this command, Christian. You're bidden to it, and you're blessed as you observe it. By faith, rest in your God today. You'll know nothing of true rest until you do. And until you do, you'll only know of true biblical rest by the hearing of the ear and the seeing of the eye, and you won't know it in your soul. You will be as the wicked, or like the troubled sea when it cannot rest. Rather than this, heed Jesus' words, "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Let us now come to that place where we find rest in elements that are blessed and made holy on this Sabbath as we come to the body and blood of Christ and the bread and the wine of the supper.